You're listening to an FX PhD podcast from fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to this week's FX PhD OD. John Montgomery with you, Mike, as always. How's it going, my friend?
It's going well. I'm slightly conflicted, I must admit, as we sit here this morning, having America won the America's Cup, but only won it because there was an Australian at the helm. So I was Team New Zealand, but I had to suddenly flip back to Team America, and then Team America won. I give them their credit. They're the biggest comeback in history. I just would have written them off. I got to tell you, there's a lesson in life from this, which is don't ever just, you know, you might be down, you might have stuff stacked against you, but while there's life, there's hope. Came back from what seemed like an impossible position, facing 8-1 down to win. It was a remarkable comeback. And as everyone here at PhD knows from my background fundamentals on the thing, I love sailing.
And we actually had some meetings up there. You and I sat in the edge, had some strategy sessions for FX PhD while watching the exciting demo race. What was it called? I don't even demo race is what it was.
No, but it was one of the challenger races in the lead up to the
But it was not really a race by that. I mean, it was the basically because one of the boats wasn't in it. But I think we talked about that on the DOD. But yes, quite stunning, isn't it? And even the fact considering they even had a 2-race penalty on top of that. So, yeah, quite stunning turn of fortune.
I really don't want to be flying over to Weta right now because I think that, talk about being unpopular, right? An Australian helps the Americans beat the New Zealanders. I mean, if we didn't have enough rivalry between Australia and New Zealand going in, now we've helped defeat the Kiwis. They're never going to forgive us.
And correct me if I'm wrong, it's probably a bigger event for the Kiwis than it is for the Americans in general, right? I mean, just to put in perspective, right?
Yeah. When Australia won the America's Cup against America back in the 80s, they literally, the whole country stopped. Like, everyone stopped. It was down to the last race. I can remember it. The Prime Minister was being doused with champagne on television. It was just huge. And New Zealand is to be given credit for just such an amazing challenge. But I've got to say, I really think this is true. Like, I've seen it in tennis matches as well. It's another place where you really notice it, where somebody can be really way down, like an Agassi can be really way down, and they just do not give up, and they have just this kind of complete focus. Whereas I think in life, just too quick, if I'm down 8-1, to think, well, what are the chances of me being able to win 9 in a row kind of thing and come back? But it can be done, and, you know, one should do it. And I don't know, it's really inspirational. I think that's what we want sport to be, right? To be kind of inspirational and something to really think about. Anyway, full credit to the New Zealanders and full credit to the Australians for winning it from the Americans. Being honest.
Yes, very, very much an international team on the American.
Well, yeah, you had a British guy helming it before the Australian.
I know.
You're like, anyone? Can anyone win this for us? We're really desperate. We spent a lot of money. We don't care. No national pride here.
American by name alone, yes. Yes,
so you're outsourcing your sailing wins. That's what you're basically saying. You've got this outsourcing thing under kind of in epidemic proportions. Anyway, yeah.
We certainly do.
Great piece of sporting. You know, I mean, there are a few events that you can just see people clawing their way back so vividly. And, you know, they'd have whole races that would be cancelled because of the wind. Just went on and on and on. Oh, my God. It just would have been horrendous. One slip and the Americans would have lost it. Anyway, back to FX stuff.
Well, you can tell that we are in break week, right? Because there's nothing going on at all at FX PhD after week 10. So we just sit around and watch the America's Cup. No, but the truth is it is quite a busy time of year. At FX PhD, and for those of you who don't know, we are announcing the new October term, as we always do, on the first of the month, which actually lands on a Tuesday this time. And we will be also then beginning the auto renewals just a couple days later, so there'll be a couple days of gaps. So if you're unsure as to whether you want to auto renew, go to fxphd.com/auto-renew, because we're going to start, just like the word says, auto-renewing your membership if you were a member of the October term. And we're going to start that process on October 3rd, kind of stateside or Europe or whatever timetable. But yes, very much looking forward to the term. We got a lot of great courses coming up and And as we talked about, leaked last week, some continuations of sorts from this term.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a really good term. The quality of the professors is the thing that I think most people are going to notice when they when that's published on Tuesday, because we kind of, I've jokingly said, I don't think I'd make it into PhD these days if I applied. Lucky I got in at the ground floor. It'd be pretty good to get into PhD these days as a professor. No, but obviously that's a reflection of the fact that we've been going long enough that, you know, there's such good vibe and good feedback from you guys on the courses that we're able to attract such good professors. And in turn, of course, that attracts really good quality of member to take those courses, which I think is just as important, actually, that whole sort of forum interaction and the quality of the people in the forums, you know. Really makes for such a great thing. It's one of the most rewarding aspects about it, actually.
It is, and realizing that at the meetup at IBC, when I was there for a mere couple of days and really short, but again, that just even trips like that pay a lot of dividends for FX PhD, because I got together, obviously, with several profs that we're going to have, not in the October, well, actually, yes, Tim Clapham was there, of course, who's a favorite of ours, and met up with him, but more importantly, actually meeting with potential professors, that's a mouthful, for future terms as well. So I actually got some really great contacts for about three or four profs, as well as significant insights as well into, you know, manufacturers and what they have on the pipeline, you know, dropping by the various people who are exhibiting there and letting us in on what they're doing in the coming months. We can kind of strategize and have stuff ready to go out, not only for January term, which is obviously our next term after October, but all the way looking forward into actually April of next year as well. So a lot of good things come out of a, albeit short visit, a lot of good things come out of a trip visit like IBC, you know?
Yeah, no, it's great. Plus, did you get my award? Yeah. Where is that?
They're shipping it to you.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I thought that was the main reason you were going over, right? Just to bring my
to accept it, yes.
On my behalf. I'd like to accept this on Mike's behalf because, quite frankly, I should have got it.
And those of you who've been listening to DOD, you know, I was just like, as we talked about this, I'm like, I totally knew what was going to happen, obviously, being on the advisory board. And actually, Autodesk sent me a miniature version of the Flame Award, actually. As a thank you gift for being part of it. Yeah, I know Sheena posted on Facebook today. I got mine as well. It's John Montgomery, advisory board member with the sculpted model from the front of the Logic cover. So, very nice of them so to do that. But yeah, in addition to the meetup, in addition to that, it's just, you know, also, you know, lots of FXPHD related stuff going on there. It's not like we're just flying around having joyrides, going to conferences and drinking beer. You might see me post pictures of having a beer, but you know what? After a hard day's work, I think that's okay. I mean, I like posting the fun parts. Meetings, posting photos of meetings, clipboards, notepads, things like that's so interesting.
I mean, I've got to say, I have no problem with that. I mean, I'm not in this business and in generally this kind of area of the whole industry to not have fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I would like to basically be profitable, be successful, and have fun. Like, I don't want to do the first two without the latter. I mean, really, seriously, like, what's the point, you know? Almost everyone that gets in this industry does it because they think it'd just be a good, fun thing to do. So, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
By all means, have a beer on me.
Yes, exactly. It's all good. You know, get the work done, have some fun. Good combination, I think, so. Speaking of, I'm actually having some fun with actually redesigning my personal website as part of the Sysadmin 202. I don't know what number it is, Sysadmin 202 course. I realized over the duration of the course that I had tried to fit too much into the term, and it took way longer to do some of the things I'd planned to do. So this class 9 is turning out to be a 2 or 3 part class actually on designing, setting up some your own personal website to be both media friendly, because obviously we need to have good quality videos and in our business portfolio of your work, videos of work breakdowns, things like that, but also on top of it be flexible in this mobile age that we're in, so that if someone wants to check out your reel or check out your work on their iPhone before they hire you, you know, they might be just chatting or something, you want to make sure that the site's presented in the best possible way. So I've been having fun doing that. I'm kind of reworking my site as the work, as kind of the way of demonstrating how to use WordPress. And of course, we use WordPress content management for both FX Guide and FX PhD. So I've learned a thing or two about that over the years.
Yeah.
But it is fun. It's been a lot of fun. And in addition to that, again, offering out in the class to help anyone who's taken that class help build their site. Because actually one reason where when time became short in this class, that was one of those things I thought I could maybe drop. But actually a couple people were like, you're starting to reduce the number of classes left. I was really looking forward to the web stuff. But the other thing is one of the requirements in our Nuke for Trainers program is that you have a current website with your current reel, as well as a section on training and so forth. And Mike, I was really surprised how many people didn't actually have a personal website or a personal website that was fairly easy to update and change. There have been a couple people who have actually become Nuke certified, but they're actually not able to be on the Foundry's website because they don't meet those criteria of having their website. And they want to build it, they're just busy. And so forth. But that's one of the reasons I want to do this and just show how easy it is to get something that looks good, looks professional in a really short time period. So I basically kind of started building a scratch from site, and it took me less than a day to get something that looked pretty darn good. So I'm going to be working through that as part of the class.
I've been doing your classes, John.
Have you?
I have.
That's scary.
No, it's good. You're pretty good at it.
Makes me nervous.
No. I openly, honestly learning from
them.
Well,
thank you. Okay, good. Glad to know.
Yeah, no, there's been a few courses. I mean, that's one of the great things about PhDs. Like, you know,
for
you
us. Think that,
yeah, no, really, I'm serious.
It is. You're right.
Because you might think John and I spend hours and hours just hanging out, you know, noodling at stuff together. But in fact, we don't. And so to have John explaining something to me for like 5 hours or 6 hours is actually really useful. So that's exactly what he would do for you if you're in his class. But I'm serious. It's like, you know, getting someone to sit down and go through stuff. And plus, of course, that would assume that you would have the time to prepare, because obviously a lecture like the ones or the talks that you give are quite dense in the sense that you're not just umming and erring. You're, you know, focused. You've got a script plan, as it were. So
yeah.
God knows how many hours that would take, or weeks, if I was just happen to be sitting in the same office with you. You know what I mean? So, yeah, no, it's great.
Yeah, so that's been a lot of fun as well. But, yeah, that's the plan. And then the last class is going to be the color calibration stuff, which I've worked myself by, as I sent an email out to everyone in the class, by installing a beta version of a certain operating system that shall remain nameless.
Okay.
So, basically, yes. The stuff that I had doesn't actually work on the beta, so take a look.
What are you talking about?
Oh, so well, yeah, well, actually, oh yeah, you know what? I think there's
you're being too cryptic.
I am. I sent an email, just got delayed a bit. My class here at the end, because I'd planned to do the class on color calibration and then the web stuff later.
Yeah, no, I understand that, yeah.
And then I installed a beta version of an operating system on my main workstation, actually two workstations.
But that's what I'm not getting. What beta are we talking about?
Yeah.
What are you not allowed to say?
Mavericks.
Ah, okay. Now I'm with you.
So I can't really say?
No, of course, you wouldn't say.
No. So, yeah.
Good.
Anyway, ended up throwing a monkey wrench into it, to say the least. So yes, all the calibration gear that I had, the measuring device, all that stuff wouldn't work. So basically had to rebuild a system in the current shipping operating system, which I have now done, and we'll get that out very soon. But that's why there was a bit of rearrangement in the classes as well.
Yeah, huh.
That was the, as I said in the email, that was the reluctant part of the reluctant sysadmin, because I had to do this. I had to actually, I only had to do it on one computer, basically, just to make sure that things for FX PhD and FX Guide work and under the new OS. We do that when it gets closer and closer to ship dates and so forth. But invariably, something does mess up and make your life miserable when doing that. So that is why I'm always reluctant to install the beta too soon.
Yes. I must admit, there was a point where you and Jeff were both on the beta for the ISO 7.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm just so not there. I just have no capacity right now, like none, for anything to go wrong. It was, you know, because I had trips planned and I had things going, and I was like, I just can't do it. I just cannot. I wish I had any spare capacity, but it was just like you start trimming back on stuff, you know. It's like I hadn't seen any feature films. I hadn't seen, and I just like there was nothing left. It's like, that's it. And I thought, if I put that on and then anything went wrong, my wife would literally kill me. She would be like, you idiot. Because she goes, why would you do that? I mean, because I'd get a day sooner.
Yeah.
You moron.
Yeah, exactly.
Bricked your phone now. So, hey, changing the subject slightly over to FX Guide.
Yep.
Did you see S.H.I.E.L.D. last night? Yesterday?
I did not. No.
Because
I was working on my glass last night.
Okay. Because anyway, we have a podcast up talking about with Mark on his series visual effects supervisor on S.H.I.E.L.D. And it was kind of fun. But as we posted that like literally about 5 minutes after the episode aired in the US, which is allowed to do it.
I laughed because I retweeted. I saw you posted that and I retweeted it.
But the English pointed out they're not getting it for a week or two. So our English listeners could have to sort of like put both fingers in their ears. Actually, it's kind of a comparison between Heroes. Remember the old Heroes show? And S.H.I.E.L.D. It's that's kind of the vibe.
Right.
Yeah, because they learned a lot of lessons, or Mark did, from Heroes. And we talk about that in relationship to S.H.I.E.L.D. Or as it's actually called, ABC Presents Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But I just call it S.H.I.E.L.D. for the hell of it.
I think most people do too.
Yeah. But apparently it rated its ass off, according to Hollywood Reporter this morning.
Yes, it got quite a bit of buzz at the place that I was visiting today, just before we started this podcast as well.
Yeah, it's going to be. There's a huge amount of really good effects work being done in episodic television, and I think that's just accelerating. I'm interested to see, from a technical point of view, how they handle the spin-off from Once Upon a Time. Because Once Upon a Time is got a lot of digital backlot stuff, and the spin-off, which is Something in Wonderland, is got like twice the virtual backlot allocation from the guys over at Zoic. And I'm just really interested to see how that comes together, because once they're in Wonderland, you know, they do mostly, you know, three-walled green screen and put everything in digitally later. And it's, you know, it reminds me of the days, you know, when Star Trek The Next Generation first appeared.
Mm-hmm.
ILM was really quite analog and optical printer based, because it was all film res, and the idea of film res to compared to standard TV NTSC PAL res was such a leap that all the digital effects stuff came in with things like Harry and stuff at the episodic television level. So you were doing stuff even with Flame on Next Generation way before those same tools were applied at the feature film level. And I've got a feeling that we could possibly be seeing that right now, in that a lot of techniques are being developed at the episodic level that will go into feature film, you know. And I'm not saying every sort of feature film, but obviously I'm talking about, you know, the effects type of feature film workflows. But because those episodic guys on a S.H.I.E.L.D. or a Once Upon a Time, they killer schedules of, you know, a short amount of time, really have to have their pipelines sorted, have to have their metadata sorted, they have to have their calibrations and everything else just really streamlined through. There's no room for some director saying, oh, we'll fix it in post. It's like, mate, we fix it now or it doesn't go to air, because unless they've got their pipelines really tight, they just can't do it. And I'm not talking about money now. I just mean literally the volume of work, the time frame available, and the sort of level that they're pitching at. And there are effects, I think, in S.H.I.E.L.D. last night that were very high quality. And I felt the same way about Star Trek. I'm not saying that Star Trek The Next Generation at its time was outgunning the work of ILM, but it was certainly showing a digital pipeline future that then, of course, companies like ILM took to even a greater level.
Yeah, that pipeline aspect, and especially a place like Zoic, is pretty amazing, because I mean they've invested a lot of effort into that, and Mike, the work that Mike's done over there is pretty amazing. On how they set up certain efficiencies so that they can get that job done in the tight deadlines and still provide, you know, still have as much time as humanly possible within the time constraints of a TV production pipeline to get the best possible effects they can, right? The key is to have more time to be able to do effects and less time getting stuff in and out, you know, from having producers using Hero to be able to check shots in and out and things like that, and not having other people do it. I mean, that pipeline stuff is some serious IP.
I would say that outside the UK, and I know that there is good work being done in the UK, I think they're actually pioneering more aggressive, more hardcore hero nuke pipelines than anyone else I know of in the United States. And that's saying something. I mean, they really grabbed Hero by the horns and just not only adopted it, but then adapted it and used many of the facilities that allow things to be open up to extend it out to produce, you know, everything that you want in terms of those extra tools, those extra adjustments that are needed, and versioning and everything else that's required as part of producing a show, getting approvals and moving stuff along. It's really impressive. On the film Falling Skies, I got to see some of the pipeline on that, and man, it's just really impressive, their Hero pipeline. It's interesting because you're seeing a ton of that those tools coming, and then you're also seeing a ton of tools coming from, like, say, the shotgun side of things, which is automating the process. I'm not now talking about Zoic, but I'm just generally speaking.
But they do use I mean,
yeah, but I'm not specifically referring to just at Zoic. I mean, there are a lot of people doing great stuff at Shotgun, but they're doing a lot. There's a lot of work coming in, sort of managing the pipeline from that point of view. You know, getting really good tools for managing how shots are being dealt with and stuff. And I've got to say, like, it's without it, I just don't think you can compete. I mean, you just get bogged down in kind of. I've spoken to people, and I won't name names, in feature films that were more like, you know, when a production is set up just for the film rather than being based in a facility. Yeah, and they haven't had the advantage of being able to have that kind of IP. And it's down to some of their staff just working astonishingly long hours and maintaining so much in their heads to juggle this stuff. And you really, I mean, I spoke to them and they were like, you know, we just didn't have the time to stop and set all this stuff up. But you could see that that was really hurting. I mean, it just meant that their staff had tremendous strains put on them to try and juggle this stuff, because productions require that flexibility. Productions almost dictate the amount of complexity that, because of the way the sort of, you know, you don't get a clean lock off and you don't get a clean handover with a good long production, post-production pipeline on most of these things. And increasingly, I just don't think you're going to be able to do it. I think if I was somebody that was awarding jobs right now, I'd be just as interested in their IP for the pipeline management as I would be their IP for, I don't know, a new fluid sim. Yeah.
Right. 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 Yeah. It's interesting. There's another interesting thing going on too, as obviously the problems in the feature film industry and artists here in LA has been well documented, obviously in the last several years. Right. But there's also quite a bit of incredible talent that has moved from that feature world into commercials. Actually, it's interesting talking to people how some of the places that are doing commercials and are more graph or TV shows are actually really happy with some of the talent they've been able to get a hold of, from really talented, you know, modelers to really talented matte painters or texture artists or things like that. It's been kind of an interesting situation. I think that's also frankly helping bump up the quality of effects that we're seeing in television shows right now.
Yeah, it's interesting how stuff gets developed. We saw online this week some posts, I certainly retweeted it, of ILM's presentation on using game engines for doing a test with Star Wars characters. And that's not the only thing, but it was a very graphic example of now the gaming engine technology coming in and feeding that. And there is going to be, you know, even more upheaval as there's more adoption, I think, of the of gaming engine tech as well. So there's like a number of big factors at play. And it's got to be pretty daunting if you're in the business. Just, you know, you want the sort of thing to settle down so you can kind of finally we can do something and get it right. But honestly, it's, you know, it's how much of your time, how many staff do you need to just devote to making sure that you're on top of what's going on?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So it's, anyway, it's good to looking forward to see if Shield is on the TiVo. Well, not the TiVo, the DirecTV, but ready to be watched in HD.
Yes. Well, now I believe you've got to go and get your car or something.
I do. Yes. Carless in Los Angeles for a full week is something quite interesting.
Yeah. So we'll be back next week with, of course, our main one of our four big ones of the year, where we go through the courses and discuss what's up. We really appreciate the support of you guys, and also the support you give us in getting the word out about the new courses. We don't take it for granted that a lot of the way that people find courses and discover what's on offer at PhD is from you, you know, members of PhD, people listen to this podcast, you know, spreading the word on social media and stuff. We do appreciate it. And if you are in a position to be able to do that, then please do, because we do rely on that. It's rather than sort of spending a bunch of money on placing banner ads all over the net, we try and put the money into the courses, and then you guys did such a great job in spreading the word. So we do appreciate that. And that'll be kicking off, as John said, next week. We will have the Tuesday launch, of course, O-Week video, which will run through the courses, and our DOD next week running through as we discuss some of the great courses on offer.
Yeah, thanks, guys, so much for taking the time to listen, and we'll talk to you then. Bye.
See ya.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.